Tiffan Guillermo works for Graphene, which is a leading French advertising agency. Is that a graphic agency?
It's a branding agency, yes.
Okay. That seems to have a special interest in books, correct?
Yes. Also yeah. In books, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Because whenever I go to a country where I don't speak the language terrifically well, I speak okay French, I like to look for information on the design of books so that I can go hunt them down in used bookstores.
Good.
That's one of the things I do. So I was doing that when I was in France recently, and I came across your really informative, lengthy article on French book design in the 20th century. Uh-huh. That's why we're together on Zoom right now.
Indeed, yes.
So tell me, if you could, a little bit about your interest in books and book design specifically.
Yes. About books themselves, I've been, I did some studies in literature when I was younger, and we had to read a lot, so very classical books and many, many books, and I guess this really opened a kind of passion for books. But at this time, I had absolutely no knowledge about the hidden side of edition houses and how it works and how they choose their texts and how they design their book covers. And when I started working at Graphene, I mainly write on anything I want. And I did once this biography about Dick Bruna, who is the illustrator of Ninetje, the little rabbit, which I think the name in English or French is Miffy. I don't know if you know Miffy.
I don't think I've met Miffy, no.
Miffy is...
Mafalda.
The comic book? The Spanish
yes.
comic book?
Yeah. The young girl.
The young, depressed girl. Well, Miffy is more a cute little rabbit. He's the main competitor of Hello Kitty, in a way.
Hello Kitty, okay.
Yeah, it's this very cute character, and it's for kids. And basically, Dick Bruna, he did this Miffy little rabbit. And I was writing about him, doing his biography, and I saw that he was also designing book covers. And I saw that his book covers were really different from what was done at this time in the 50s. So I thought, what was done at this time in the 50s? Because I had no clue. And basically the article started like this. And from this curiosity, then I started writing about book covers from the 3rd century, basically from the beginning of the book until now, in the US, in France, in England. And it was actually a very huge work, but very interesting. And this is how I got to know a bit more on the topic. But I'm not an expert on this in the beginning. I just had the curiosity to learn about it. So I learned so many things that we can discuss about, but I'm really not an expert. Like, I don't,
no.
You know,
no, well,
it's just
yeah,
some
I,
kind of
so,
thing. I.
So it's two amateurs talking about something that they're passionate about. That's what this is.
That's good. Yes.
Yeah. I understand that you're not an expert, but your enthusiasm takes you a long way, I should say. Let's start sort of at the beginning of the 20th century, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And at the beginning of the 20th century, is Vidar came to the forefront with a specific book that's referenced, and that is a book called Parallèlement by Verlaine.
Mm-hmm.
The book was published in 1900 and illustrated by Pierre Bonnard.
Okay.
And it's basically called the first modern livre d'artiste of the 20th century. And then we look at what happened with Gallimard that set up in about 1910.
Mm-hmm.
And with their what's called their white books. They're actually cream, but they're nowhere near like the livre d'artistes. They're pretty plain, right?
Yes. I was about to say a bit boring, but...
Classic, but boring. Yeah,
they're very classic. And the thing is that they were cream and white in paper because they were supposed to be covered with the leather cover, but
that's
they never
right.
were. So this is why it's like, yeah. It's a bit like inside, it's a bit like the skeleton of the book, actually. They were never covered and then they just stayed like this. So they look kind of plain. It's a minimalistic way to illustrate the book, I think, because now it's... Actually, I don't know the book you're talking about, the one illustrated by Bonnard. I've never seen it, but I know Bonnard, and I guess that this book must be very beautiful. I need to look at it. I'll look for it afterwards.
This book, Poems by Verlaine, was illustrated by Pierre Bonnard. It's being called the first modern livre d'artiste. But at the same mm-hmm. time, Gaston Gallimard was launching the publishing house, and his approach to designing the books was pretty well the opposite of this livre d'artiste movement. And so I just wonder if you could give me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, that Gallimard books, they seem very very plain and very simple. Actually, the collection by Faucheux, the French book club collection that arrived maybe 30 years later, they were very revolutionary in a way concerning artistic books, I mean. But maybe we'll talk about this later, so I don't want to talk about this now. Maybe it's not your point, but the Gallimard collection in itself is very minimalistic, and it's very clever because it hasn't changed since it was created in 1910, and it's still nowadays it is the best of all. When you look at a book from Gallimard, you know that it will be very high quality text. You know that it will be very, the content will be good, that the experience itself will be great because the book is also, it has a high quality paper, the writing is great. I mean, it's something you cannot go wrong with. When you buy it, you know it will be interesting and clever. It's known as the white literature today. As we would say, there's the black literature. I don't know if you say this in English, but in French, it's for the la littérature noire.
We call it the noir literature.
Okay, so you use the French word. Yeah, so in opposition to this, you have the white literature, the very classical one. I was saying this before. The white paper was meant to be covered with leather, but it never was covered, actually. So it just remained like this in its very simplistic way, I would say. And it just never changed. And then all the French collections that came afterwards, they were really inspired by this one.
The point is, I guess, that these books were designed very simply because the idea was that they would be bound.
Yes.
They weren't designed to necessarily be attractive and appealing and to try to make people buy them. They were printed with the idea that the person who buys it would do something more with it.
Yeah, it was just an uncovered cover.
That's a good way of putting it, yeah. it wasn't until the 1940s, you mentioned, that the publishing house Stock brought color in. Is that right?
It depends on what you call color, actually.
Solid yellow and then green.
Yeah. We had green and yellow with the mainly Grasset. Grasset brought the color, and Stock had this yellow square. But I think they experienced a bit some kind of new papers before that. Grasset tried to use a blue square. Albin Michel tried to, they took off the square. So, whoa, they got really wild with the cover. The main color, yeah, was in, from my notes, from 1946 with Stock. But the collection which is more known for using colors is Grasset.
And these are solid colors, right?
Yeah, but they're kind of faded colors. They're not so
bold.
Yeah, it's very light in a way. When you look at all of them from far, you will think that it's all a variation of Gallimard. They kind of all look alike, except maybe Grasset, which has this yellow, and the paper is a bit grainy. And Stock used the yellow, but now it's known because it's been using a dark blue. But otherwise, they were all cream, and they had the frames in blue or in red, but mainly they were a bit like Gallimard, because being like Gallimard meant that you had high quality content. So yes. You wanted to look like Gallimard.
Yeah, so it wasn't hugely experimental then.
Not until the 40s, with for sure. It was very classical. And you had this kind of the intelligentsia in France, very educated people who had the access to these books, and they knew Proust, and they were all very cultivated, and most of the people, they didn't have access to these books. So having the Gallimard collection, or having a book of this kind, was something reserved to a certain kind of people.
It was exclusive to them.
Exactly. Yeah, thank you. It was a bit exclusive. So
yeah, and they felt what? They felt that they were superior to the...
Kind of. Yeah, it was... Yeah, you had the intelligent people reading these kinds of books. And so they didn't... I think they didn't need to have a specific crazy looking books, because that was the code and that was the book you wanted to have.
They knew what they needed and wanted to read, and they didn't want anyone to use all sorts of persuasion techniques to try and get them
They didn't even need it, and the mass, I mean the people, the mass, they were not reading these kinds of books because they were apparently too intellectual.
They were expensive too, huh?
I guess so, but honestly, I have no idea. But I think, yeah, because in comparison to the pocketbooks that were out later, or the paperbacks in America, these were really cheap books. Yeah. So I guess that these were more expensive and way more qualitative also. But I mean, there was no need to do anything specific about these books, because the people who would buy them, they knew that they would buy them, and the mass was not buying it. So
they didn't need
it was to, like a club.
They didn't need to be persuaded or sold.
Yeah.
After World War II, you mentioned his name, Pierre Bourchoux. He became the first artistic director of the French Book Club. So can you tell me about that?
Yeah, so this collection, you know how we have, I don't know if, I guess you have this in Canada, the box. Sometimes nowadays you buy something, you pay a fee, a monthly fee, and then you receive something in your mailbox, and it's like a little box with some goodies inside, some cosmetics or some makeup or whatever. And basically at this time they were doing this with the books. So every month you would receive a book. But these books were really unique. It was completely the opposite of the Gallimard edition. Each book was really considered as a piece of art, and they would decorate or make the book alive with text, with images, with specific formats also, different sizes. So they would always look different, and it would have a real graphic soul. And also from what I learned, for sure, was also inspired by the cinema. You know, the, how do you call this?
The credits.
The beginning credits in the in a movie, when you introduce the movie, and he would do the same in his books. So when you would open the first page and second and third, there was already something going on. It was not, it wasn't just plain white pages.
It was like an introduction to the book.
To the text, yes, exactly. And even sometimes you could have some transparent pages with images on it that would tell a story when you move it from one page to another. I mean, the book wasn't just a book. It came with a box. It came with a paper around it. It came with things inside it. So it was really alive. And it was very precious and very beautiful in itself. And it was very illustrative compared to Gallimard book. But the quality of the text was the same. Because at this time you had either very cheap literature with, you know, the stories of musketeers and vampire stories or the adventure stories, or you had the very classical literature of Gallimard.
Right.
And the French Book Club was something to dismantle the sobriety of these books, of the classic books, and become a bit more fun, but also precious. It would really give you the envy to possess this book.
Right.
It was something very beautiful.
Yeah, there was the Book of the Month Club in the United States, which they came in, I think it was in the 20s, actually, late 20s.
I think it was inspired by this, actually. He didn't invent the concept, yeah.
Now, these books, do they actually really look beautiful, or are they kind of kitschy looking?
No, it's not supposed to be catchy. It's supposed to be to already tell the story of the text in it, because Faucheux believed that the text wasn't only a text, it was also a soul. The book had a soul, so this is basically to embody this soul.
That's pretty grandiose.
Yeah, I think it's really nice.
I think there's about 700 of them in total, you mentioned, right?
Yes, yes.
And are they, as I say, are they beautiful themselves, or do they look kind of a little bit, I'm trying to come up with a word that you might understand. I've used kitschy, which I'm not sure you understand, or cheesy is another one.
Yeah.
Not like today, do they look kind of what's the term, not, they don't really look beautiful, but they look trying, they look like retro. They're trying to be beautiful.
I think it's a style, so you have the, it's a design style, so now it looks a bit retro for us.
Okay,
but I still think it's a beautiful object, and it's something that we don't even have today much. I mean, it's still something very different from what we have. He was playing a lot with the fonts, typography, and he was playing with collages, and he was doing things that were not seen at all, because there was no artistic director at this time. So basically graphic design was still considered as art at this time. So it's an artistic movement. This is why maybe now it may look a bit, it's not so modern as what we have today, but it is still very interesting, I think.
You basically say that publishers began to understand the power of graphics to be able to make books stand out.
I think that this was with the beginning of the Poche collection, a pocket collection.
Before we get to that, these French book club books, were they hardcover or soft cover?
I think it depended on the books, but I believe there were hard covers, but honestly, I think that from depending on the book, they could do whatever they want, because the point was to do whatever they want. I mean, according to the text, to what the text meant. So they could have done something triangular if they wanted, I guess, but I think it was mainly hardcover though.
I think, yeah, you mentioned that for sure you wanted each book to be unique, to reflect the content, as you say.
Yes.
Can you give me a bit more detail on how he might have gone about doing that?
Yes, that he was, like we said, he was introducing the text with a few images, and the cover and the back and the inside of the covers, they were also telling a story. And then he would play a lot with the fonts, typography, inside or outside. So even the text in itself could have different writings, different fonts or sizes, I guess. And he was also an artist, so he would really illustrate using his own techniques that were really new and not seen. I wrote that he was inspired by the Dada movement.
Yeah.
So by collage. Yes, exactly. He was inspired by the Dada and the constructivists.
Yeah, the Russians.
But he did something but he did something different. He did something of his own, doing this collages and it was really an artistic démarche, way of doing things.
He said that he wanted to design books to be kept for their beauty and singularity.
Exactly, yeah, because the Gallimard, as we said, was so plain. You would just read the text for it was, and the true intellectuals, they would say that only the text was important and the rest was really nonsense and it was not important. But yes, for sure, he did this revolution because he really believed that the text had this soul, and this soul could be seen outside from the text. So it could be seen on the cover, it could be seen inside the first pages, and it would also tell a story even if you didn't read the text. So you could, in one glance, you could seize the essence of the book and its magical universe and everything just by looking at it. It's a bit what we have nowadays, but he was the first to do this in France.
Yeah, you mentioned Dada movement and constructivism.
Mm-hmm.
So he's mixing genres, and you talk about this gap in which he creates something new.
He was, I'm reading it again.
Well, one of the things you talk about is the typography, but also photographs and repeating images, for example.
The slices, yes.
That's new, right?
Yes, he was, because Faucher was an artist, and he was trying new techniques, collages and slicing images and then repeating them so that it would create this kind of movement, because basically what he brought to the book was the movement. So the movement in the beginning to introduce the text, the movement with the images, this kind of things.
Like that a he movie. Used.
Yeah. But I'm not sure that he used the collage techniques in all of these books. I don't think he did. I think this was his own style, the slicing thing, but I don't think he did it in all gaps.
No, okay. Well, he's known for his use of typography as design, and as you say, introducing the language of cinema.
Yeah.
And this really hadn't happened before. This was brand new, wasn't it? Innovative.
The playing with fonts was innovative. because the Gallimard, they used the Didot font, and Didot was used for Louis XIV.
Okay.
Yeah. So right. it was a very, you know, this kind of high standard expectation he would have.
Royal.
Yeah, it was elitist. And it was not for everybody. So
no.
Basically, when Faucheux was playing with the fonts, I guess he also made it a bit more accessible. Apparently, he said he hated the images. So he thought that using text was quite interesting as an image in itself. And I guess this was new.
Okay. So then we move on to the livres de poche, which were introduced by Hachette in 1953. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Apparently, yes. If I'm not wrong in my article, I guess.
Okay.
But in France.
Yes, and they were designed to appeal to the general public.
Yes.
Big
so that was the revolution.
Big circulation and a cheap price.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
So everything at the opposite of Gallimard.
But the idea was to maintain a high editorial quality, though, wasn't it?
Yes, because it's a bit like the Penguin edition that was in the UK. So, like I said before, we had either cheap books or adventure books that were not considered as real literature, that were cheap in the content and cheap in the printing process, and yellow paper, and or you had this high standard quality books from Gallimard. So when they had this idea of publishing small books but with interesting and high quality contents, it was a bit of a bridge between these two worlds, and it was a way to have more people access to the books also. And so the intelligentsia, the Gallimard intellectuals, they were really pissed by the livre de poche. There's a small video extract in my article where a journalist asks a guy in the street, a reader, what do you think of the livre de poche? And he says, I have a very bad opinion about them. Beaucoup de mal, he says. Meaning that he's really angry with this new kind of books. For him, it's giving Proust and giving Aragon, and giving very very rich contents to people who were not considered as readers.
Low class, and they shouldn't be allowed to read high class literature.
Exactly. Yeah, you say it way more, way better than me. I'm sorry about my English. I have trouble with my English. It's been a while.
Yeah, well, no, you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Yeah, many of these sort of intellectuals found the posh livre de poche vulgar.
Mm-hmm. The livre de poche by Hachette was inspired a lot by the American books, by the paperbacks. And the paperbacks, as I said before, they were not considered as good literature. They were really like low-class books and very catchy. And they would put, you know, women, naked women on the covers, and strong men, and everything, a bit like a movie poster in a way.
Yeah, sex and blood. Sensational.
Yeah. So when Hachette decided to do the pocketbooks and use this kind of cover, it was at first very badly seen because they were too dramatic and too catchy and too colorful for the high class.
It wasn't appropriate to the content.
This is what they thought, But actually, it worked very well. I mean, for the people who were not used to read, it was a great way to start. And I guess, actually, that these colorful covers, they were really attractive. And then I think that many people started to be interested in books because of the covers, because they were fun and attractive.
Let's hope they weren't disappointed when they saw this naked woman on the cover and then they had to read Proust, which lovely, but doesn't quite deliver like they had hoped it would.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, maybe they stopped, but at least they had the book and the publishers, yeah. They sold the book anyway, so it was good for them.
Well, they presented literature like any other mass consumer good. And maybe that's what upset the intellectuals.
I think so. Because it was not reserved to them anymore. It was, it was meant to be sold. It was at the beginning of advertising also. And so you had to make the book stand out from the others and have a catchy cover, big letters for the title so that you would see it from far away. And yeah, so it was meant to be sold and to be catchy and not meant to be a precious, beautiful,
exclusive
object. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm not going to get this right, but I'll try it again.
For sure,
he took over at Livre de Poche in 1964, and he changed the look, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was the artistic director for the Livre de Poche, so it was almost 10 years after the first book came out, so they had time to produce a lot of catchy covers. And then he came and he broke the American codes that were on the book covers. And he brought a bit of French design to these covers. He added a bit more of classicism, more of artistic touch. He added something a bit more precious to this pocketbook. So it was a kind of I don't think I can say that.
Say it in French.
He would adoucir. He would pacify, in a way, the he would make it more smooth.
More acceptable?
Yeah, in a way. He would mix a bit the genre and make it more accessible and acceptable. Yeah, in a way. I think so.
To who? To the intellectuals?
Yes.
So they weren't so garish or sensational. They were more in line with what they think great French literature should look like, how it should be presented.
A bit more. I think for the intellectual, there was nothing else than the Gallimard cover anyway, or Gallimard or Grasset or whatsoever. The Poche was always out of their judgment, for sure. I think the Livre de Poche was really badly considered. But what Fauchot did, if in the article there's an image of a collection he did for Proust, and he did this small etiquette on the cover, which has exactly the same codes as the Gallimard cover. So he added a bit of this recipe, the prestige of Gallimard, using the red frame and red letters. He added this on the pocket cover to make it a bit more acceptable, to show the people that this was high class literature, but in the same time he had the colleges, he had the nice artistic cover, so that it would still be catchy, but you would understand, because of the Gallimard codes, that the text was intellectual and it was not a paperback. It was not low-class literature.
He kind of adjusted it back to something that made sense then.
Yeah, I think.
And you point to Breton's Nadja as one of the first of his.
Yes, it's a collage of a hand, and you have the head of a woman, which is drawn, and on the back you have a few letters, so it's handwritten. It's really like a collage, and you have a bit of color, but it's really kind of black and white, but inside you have also illustrations, so I think it has the feeling of the French book club in it. It is illustrative and it is beautiful, and has I think that the pages are red on the side also. So he added a few things to make it more attractive and nicer to have. Maybe he was aiming at these intellectual. He was trying to get these to read the pocketbooks, I guess. Maybe
yeah,
that was
a big part of his job was to try and increase sales of the books, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but maybe he was trying to seduce the ones who were already reading also.
Yeah.
Not only the other ones, but also these high-class readers, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, so now we've got Robert Massin coming onto the scene.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Massin or Massin?
Massin.
Massin, good, I got that one right.
Yes, you did.
Maybe you could tell me a bit about his folio collection that came in 1971.
Yeah, he was, folio is a daughter of Gallimard. So this is interesting to know. So this is when you realize that in the 70s, Gallimard understood or realized that the pocketbooks were actually something good to develop. And so you need to keep in mind that this folio pocketbook collection is designed by Gallimard. So it had to reach this kind of standards also.
Yeah.
And what Massin did was that he was trained by Fauché, actually. Basically, he used the same font and he had the title written in big letters on top of the book. And then on the bottom of the book, you had to have an illustration. And these codes, they were applied to all of the folio books. Because when you look at the Livre de Poche, they were all completely different. The font was different all the time. The composition was different. The images were different. Sometimes you had collages. Sometimes you had hand illustrations. Sometimes you had photographs. So the Poche, they always look different. And the folio, what they did is that they had to look like a collection.
Yeah, uniform.
Yes. So there's this white background, which kind of reminds us of Gallimard, and you have the Baskerville font that was used. So there was a real layout on the cover, so that from far away you recognize because of the font, because of the layout. You know that this is folio. Apparently, the revolution that they also did, that Massin brought, was that the reading was also improved, because they changed the font and the paper so that it was much nicer to read.
More legible.
Exactly. He had this quality of Gallimard into his pocketbooks, the folio.
Yes, that's interesting, isn't it? How what we're seeing is different sort of schools of thought on book design being brought together and kind of a hybrid.
Yes, it's always improved from what was already existing in a way.
Yeah. Okay, well, so tell me about the Scorpion editions.
They lasted for a few years only. They were very particular because they were designed to sell, basically.
Yeah.
They were meant to look like American books. And they were meant to be very catchy. The covers were always using red, white, and black.
And these were thrillers, right? They were kind of detective
yeah.
thrillers.
There's this story of the Dalouin, who is the the director of this collection, who asked Boris Vian to write a book in an American way, like a detective book as American would do. And Boris Vian said, okay, give me 10 days and I will give you something. So he knew that this would be crappy because writing a book in 10 days is very, I mean, yeah. It's very fast. So they knew that the content would be kind of bad. And it was, I shall spit in your on your graves. J'irai cracher sur vos tombes. And so he used the fake name, Vernon Sullivan.
Pseudonym, yeah, Vernon Sullivan, yeah.
He used this red, you know, like what you have on the, when you have sails, you use this kind of big red star, very catchy, screamy etiquette. And he wrote the letters in white and black inside it. And it was very, very catchy, very...
Striking.
Striking, yeah.
Eye-catching.
Yes. And so he did this, and I guess it was a kind of a joke or something. I think this guy who created them, he just did this kind of for fun, or because he had some money and he wanted to publish books. And it was not very well appreciated by the Puritan people. And the edition house, the Scorpion House, they disappeared quite fast because there was a scandal about a woman being murdered, and there was this book on the side table of the bed. And so they said, oh, if you read the Scorpion books, then you will become a murderer. So you have to stop. And everything became crazy about these books. And so they stopped.
Yeah, it was the a pastor that said, you'll go to hell if you read them, right?
Kind of, yeah, it was this kind of craze. And the books were banned.
Oh, wow, okay. So who's the publisher?
It was Jean Dalluin.
Name of the publishing house?
Édition du Scorpion. And so, you know what happens when you say, you cannot read this book, or you'll go to hell if you read this book, then obviously everybody bought the book.
Right.
So they sold a lot of copies because it was banned. You know, the books, they were bought in the black market and everything.
Those are collectible.
Yeah, I guess so, yes. And the covers are really cool, actually. They're always handwritten. They're really unique. Always red and black, and very unique in their style.
I thought others copied them, though, later. Hachette's copied them later. They've got covers that look like that too.
Maybe. I haven't seen them though, but I mean, but red and white and black can be done by anyone though. But
just quickly getting back to Massin, some of the books that he did that are particularly memorable are Ionesco's plays, right?
Yes.
Is that part of Folio, or were they on their own?
I think Massin, he worked only for Folio.
Yeah, he was artistic director at Gallimard, right?
Yes, yeah, of the house, yes.
And he's actually known as Massin, not Robert Massin, because he dropped his first name after a while.
Ah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a bit more pretentious, I guess.
It's like a signature.
Yeah. Okay, so bringing it back up to more current times, Cent Pages in the 2000s, their work is an ode to typography. Can you tell me a bit about them?
I don't know much about them, but the particularity about these books is that there are no images on the cover. It's only text. They're famous for being a very typographical edition house, and the covers are always black, and the sides of the pages are red, and it's written in white, either white on black or either black on white, but mostly black, only text.
Okay.
Yeah, it looks like a manifesto, because the letters are very big, and it's really, you see that the name of the author, the title of the book, and the edition house, they have the same size. And this is very new, because usually the title is really bigger and the edition house is quite small.
Yeah.
And here they're all equal. And this is when you realize that the text is really important to them.
And then you finish off your article with probably my favorite selection of books in that. And those are the ones by Zulma.
Zulma, yes.
And I guess your graphene company was involved in recruiting David Pearson, the famed Penguin book designer. Is that right?
Yes. I wasn't working for graphene at that time, but Zulma came to them to redesign their books because they were not selling much at this time and it wasn't really working well. And so graphene proposed some few directions to redesign the book covers. And they actually said, oh, well, you could add some illustrations on your covers. For example, the illustrations of David Pearson. And Zulma decided to call David Pearson directly. And they actually worked with him directly after that.
They are absolutely fantastic.
Yes.
Using patterned paper, repeating patterns that are just so explosive with color.
It looks like a bit like a wallpaper from the 60s.
Well, to me, it looks more like the patterned paper of the Kerwin Press.
I should look at that.
Yeah, one person, oh goodness. Now her name's escaping me. Enid is her first name. Enid Marx, I think it is.
Okay.
And then you put in a quote from Laure
Leroy. She's the director of the Zulma edition.
She says there's no better way to save the book than to make real books. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, because we were actually to do this last part, I called her and I asked her a few questions about how she designed this collection, and the fact that they did this, I think, around in 2006. So basically, at this time, there was the threat of the digital book, and so yeah, I asked her that how do you keep on living with this threat? I mean, the Kindle is a real threat to book covers in a way, and how do you feel about that? She loves the Faucheux spirit, and I think that all these new houses, new edition houses, they have this in mind that the book must be an object of desire and it must be something that you love to have in your hands because it's the only thing that will keep it from fading. Because the Kindle, you have the text, but you cannot touch the object. And so if the editors, they want to sell their books and they want to make them live, then they have to make sure that the object is really nice and that you will actually want to possess it because it looks so beautiful. I wanted to talk about the Monsieur Toussaint Louverture also. Have you ever seen their books? Maybe you haven't. It's a little edition book that they also have the same strategy that they create very sensual, very beautiful books. Their covers, they look as if they were posters. Like each cover is so beautiful, you actually want to hang it on the wall.
It's, wow.
They're really, really beautiful. In the article, it's just before the 100 pages.
Okay.
If you have it, it's called Monsieur Toussaint Louverture, and they have very different formats, very many different treatments, but they're always super beautiful, and they're really like posters, paintings, and they work with many different artists to create their covers.
That's good to know. Are they still publishing?
Yeah, also, yeah. the editor, he said that reading is a sensual experience. So he was emphasizing on this. You can play with the paper, you can play with the soft or hard cover, you can play with shiny paint or shiny color for the title or whatsoever. Yep. And they're really playful with all of what they can. Actually, they're really doing a bit like the French book club.
That's really good. Now, we have got a nice range of stuff to look for. I want to go back to France now and get into those bookstores.
There's one that we didn't talk about, which I love. It's the Ailleurs et Demain by Gérard Klein, which was made in the 70s. And it's made with the cover. All the covers are in silver, bronze, or gold paper. And they have this technology, printing technology on it, that you have the feeling that the paper is animated.
When you move it.
Yeah, because it's engraved. The paper is engraved on an aluminium foil.
Oh, yes.
And so you have this kinetic movement on the cover, and whenever you move it, it's like it's making waves, and it's amazing. It's so beautiful. It was a collection for science fiction books in the 70s because everything that was silver and gold was very attractive at this time, and it was parallel to the space expeditions and stuff. So the Ailleurs et Demain collection is something you really have to see also.
How do you spell that?
Ailleurs is Aillurs. And demain is tomorrow. So DEMAIN.
Okay. I was very impressed with your article. And now it's online. So what's the easiest way find those articles?
You can go to grapheine.com. So grapheine.com. And then the best thing would be in the search section to just write book covers.
Okay.
I think it will, or otherwise you just go on blog and history of graphic design, and then you would look for it. But just go on the blog and look for book covers, and then you will find them.
Or they could just search your name as well, which is Tiffane Guillermou, right?
Yes. Yeah. They could search for this on Graphene also, and you will see my articles. Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic. I really appreciate you spending the time to inform me about all of these great possible book collecting ideas when I'm in France.
Well, I hope you will find some, because it would be great to have a few of these. I don't have them, but I really would love to have a few.
You have to hang out in more used bookstores.
Yeah, exactly. I have to go. Actually, if you go in France by the rivers, usually you have little bookstores, very antique bookstores. And in Paris, you have they're very famous by the Notre Dame.
Bouquiniste.
Yeah, the Bouquiniste. Yeah, and you have some in Lyon also. And for sure, you can find the Ailleurs et Demain collection over there, or maybe some old Faucheux book, or I'm sure of this. It would be great. I just have to look for them though, but it's in my plans. And I'm glad that you stumbled upon this article, and I'm really happy that you contacted me for this podcast.
Very good.
It's fun.
You're
to
in
do.
Brittany, you told me, right now on holiday.
Yeah.
You should go to the book town Becherel.
Ah, yeah, it's not far away.
There's true. 30 or 40, or maybe not so many now. But when I was there, there were quite a few used bookstores there.
Ah, yeah, it's very famous for the books. It's true. I've never been there, though. I should.
Yeah, well, there we go.
I will. I have
good.
To hunt the books like you do.
You will, because it sure is fun when you find them.
Yeah. Mm-mm. It's a little treasure, and they keep on existing, and we have to preserve them.
Yeah, so now, were you a book collector before or not?
Kind of, but I collect the texts rather than the yeah. objects. But now I'm switching now. I'm collecting the objects more. Do you even collect books that are not in English?
Well, as I say, the first thing to do when I travel is to try to find out about the book designers in that country, to do exactly what we've just done. And then I've got a little list, and it's not a very good interview, but it is up on the website. It's lovely, but he doesn't speak very good English. You speak better English than he did. Mm. And he wrote a beautiful book on Spanish book designers. Yeah, his name is Emilio Gil. And mm-hmm. he gave me the 4 or 5 important Spanish book designers. And so you can, if you listen to that, then you can get those names. And then I went and I searched out and found books by each of them.
Great.
When nice. I was in Spain.
It was designers or editors?
Designers. Designers.
Okay.
Yeah. That book, you should get, if you're interested, you should try and buy his book.
I will look for it because you sent me the link.
Well, yeah, because you're right next to Spain. It's pretty easy.
Yeah, also.
But first you've got to do the French ones.
I really need to find the Ailleurs et Demain book. It's all science fiction. I want to buy Dune in this collection because I've never read Dune and I really want to read it. And I know that it's been edited in silver, shiny cover, and I really want to have it.
They just came out with a movie on a new version of Dune.
Apparently, yes. This is why I want to get the book before, because otherwise it's going to be the craze about Dune, and I want to find it before it gets too expensive.
So, well, thank you, Tiffany. And it's been really wonderful talking to you. Thank you.
Well, thank you also. It was great. Thank you very much.